This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. When you go shopping online or at the grocery store, you pay attention to the prices, right? You decide whether to spend the extra 50 cents for the name brand diced tomatoes versus the store brand, right? Well, why can't you do the same for your health care? How much is your knee replacement going to cost at Hospital A or Hospital B or at an outpatient surgery center? And it's not even as simple as asking the price. What about getting another opinion about whether you need that knee surgery at all? Would physical therapy work as well? My next guest says, let's see more transparency in the business of your health. Transparency of pricing. Transparency on the kickback doctors get from drug and device companies. Transparency in how often your surgeon performs this gallbladder surgery and her rate of success. Shouldn't you have a right to know? Dr. Paul Ruggieri is the author of The Cost of Cutting, A Surgeon Reveals the Truth Behind a Multi-Billion Dollar Industry. He's a surgeon in private practice in Fall River, Massachusetts. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Ruggieri.
Thank you for having me back, Ira.
Your book covers a lot of ground, from hospital billing practices to doctor kickbacks. What's your overall overarching thesis here?
Well, you alluded it to it when in your introduction. There really is no transparency in hospital pricing today. Patients are at a loss to compare pricing. There's no hospital pricing has been immune to competitive market forces, and they've been able to charge what they want. And insurance companies pay what they want. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, patients have no input into that at all. There's no way for patients to compare knee replacements for several hospitals in their community. There's just no way to do that right now.
Well, why isn't healthcare a market with transparent pricing?
It should be. It really should be. We're heading that way. Part of the problem is patients have been shielded from paying for their health insurance, from really seeing the cost of their health insurance. I mean, they pay their premium, their deductible, and they get a bill for $20,000, and they're not responsible for the rest, and they don't really look into that bill. Patients should really, if they're going to have surgery, after their surgery, request a bill, an itemized bill, and just look at it. It'll give you an education on what's being charged.
You write about a woman you call Mrs. Jones, whose physician actually lies to her and says a certain procedure will cost more at a competing hospital, and what he actually wants is to keep her in his hospital network and keep the money flowing there.
Well, it's a phenomenon that's going on nationwide, and in part it's been spurred on by the Affordable Care Act. Hospital systems are consolidating. And I write about this in my chapter called Turf Wars. They're buying up smaller hospitals. They're buying up physicians' practices, primary care, specialists, surgeons, because they really want to eke out every source of revenue from that patient, from the time they step into the hospital, from the time they go into the operating room, from the time they leave. They want to retain their patients. Retention and leakage are buzzwords today. Mm-hmm. Hospital systems want to retain patients, and they do not want them to leak out of the system.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way to regulate this? Could it be regulated?
Well, I don't know about regulation, but hospitals need to be accountable for their charges. Right now, hospitals and surgeons, for instance, myself, I am a fee-for-service. That's how I get reimbursed. I do an operation, I get reimbursed, regardless of what my outcome is. Hospitals get reimbursed for the charges regardless of what their outcomes are right now. If you start linking outcomes to charges, then it's a different ballgame. Mm-hmm.
So how should they be linked? What would be? Give me an example how in a better world it would work.
For instance, if my complication rates for specific operations are a lot lower than the national average or my colleagues, I should get paid more for what I do. If surgeons have better complication rates than some of their colleagues with specific operations, they should get reimbursed more. Same with hospitals. But first of all, you need some transparency to see the experience of hospitals and surgeons. You need to analyze that first. But patients have no access to that right now. Mm-hmm. Hospitals have information on their outcomes, on their complication rates, their infection rates. Surgeons know what their complication rates are intuitively, but patients don't know.
So how could I find out?
Well, hospitals do list some on their websites. One of the good things about the Affordable Care Act, it's kind of mandated this approach. Hospitals are now listing certain quality parameters on their websites for Medicare patients. It's starting to happen. As far as surgical experience, you have to ask your surgeon, you know, what is your experience? How many of these operations have you done this month, this year? I would also ask my primary care doctor, why are you referring me to this particular surgeon? Mm-hmm. Is it because you know if his or her outcomes are good, or just because he's in your network, he's in your hospital system?
Mm-hmm. Our phone number is 844-724-8255. Let's go to Sarah in Orlando. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So my question, last year I had what I can only describe as sticker shock in the doctor's office. I was there for a breast biopsy, and I had had the appointment for a couple of weeks and had no clue how much it was going to cost. And before they brought me in, they sat me down and had me sign all these papers and told me how much it would cost me. And I was floored, but I was already obviously very emotional. I didn't feel like I had time to stop things and go and, you know, shop around or figure out if this is right. And, you know, when you're sort of facing even not a diagnosis, but a potential of something, you don't have time, I guess. So my question is, in the timing of things, when do you do this? Is it before you have the appointment? I don't know.
Good question, Sarah. Let's see if we get an answer. Thanks
question.
For calling.
Sarah, ideally, you want to do this before you step into a surgeon's office or an operating room. Elective surgery, if you're seeing a surgeon for consultation and they talk about elective surgery that's going to happen weeks down the line, that'll give you some time. Ideally, you want to research this before you step into a surgeon's office. Again, your primary care doctor must have referred you to that surgeon. So you need to know why you're going to that surgeon. And once you know why, it'll give you an idea what to look up, and where to begin.
Mm-hmm. You write about a patient you call Mr. Wilkes, who comes to you with a medical bill he just can't understand. It has an $800 charge for, quote, operating room services. And $53 for 1 minute of oxygen. Where do they get these numbers? And does the Affordable Care Act do anything to about these?
This has been going on for decades. Each hospital has their own secret charge system. It's something they use to equate charges to different services. There's really no rhyme or reason to it. We're getting now towards what's called bundle payments and the way to combat those specific charges, because charges can be inflated. Hospitals mm-hmm. can put things in charges. But if hospitals are given one bundled payment by Medicare, for instance, for a knee replacement, that's all the money they have to use to take care of that patient. So they have to divide it up the way they need to. And if they go beyond that price, they're responsible for the rest.
Mm-hmm. You've written about unnecessary surgery. I mean, some really interesting cases. I remember there was a case of a woman who came to you and had abdominal pain that no one could diagnose. And you talk about she wanted to have exploratory surgery and you wouldn't give it to her.
She did. And she actually walked out of my office because I wouldn't give it to her.
I mean, is that a common thing? Say, doctor, I want to have surgery, and you have to talk them out of it?
Well, it's not common, but you do feel pressure from patients because mm-hmm. many times you're their last resort. You've been referred to them. They've seen other doctors. But when people think they're going to see a surgeon, they think we're the cure-all by an operation. And that's always not the case. And you just have to communicate with people that's not the case. But patients do expect an operation will cure them. And when they hear that it won't, they're disappointed at the very least. This was an extreme case, and I'm not sure if this patient found another surgeon to operate on her.
Let's go to Amy in Petaluma, California. Hi, Amy. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment that it is difficult, you know, in the way the system is set up right now to shop around, as you said, for medical care, for one, because oftentimes when you need help, you need it now. You know, if you need something, different family, heart attack or whatever, you know, you need the help immediately. And then the other thing is, and so you don't have time to shop around. Then the other thing is the insurance. The way the insurance system is set up, you can't really shop around because a lot of times insurance will only cover this doctor or that doctor, and it just makes it really difficult.
Hmm. Good point.
Yeah, that is a good point. Again, emergency situations are a different animal altogether. when you go to the emergency room with acute appendicitis, you're going to be looking at the surgeon on call and the hospital there. They will take care of you. You just don't have time to do that.
Hmm. You say hospitals are actually sterilizing one-time-use disposable surgical equipment so they can bill you for it but not have to buy another one.
Well, that's not new. That's been going on for a while. A lot of hospitals do it. It's legal. It's ethical. The FDA has approved this. It saves hospitals money from buying new reusable instruments. I do a lot of laparoscopic surgery. I use a lot of instruments that in the past have been used once and get thrown away, and those cost money to replenish them.
Why don't we just go back to sterilizing reusables then?
You know. Well, they should. Originally, we used instruments that were made of stainless steel metal that you just sterilize and keep using.
We should go back to that instead of throwing away.
Well, it'll save the system a lot of money if we do, and you may find us going back to that in some fashion.
Mm-hmm. In one chapter, you write of performing surgery, and I thought this was fascinating, with two medical device reps looking over your shoulder in the operating room. What are they doing there? Tell us that story.
Well, medical device reps are in operating rooms throughout the country. Again, that's legal. It's ethical. They're there. Now, most patients should know they're there. And they're there for a variety of reasons. One is to make sure their surgeon using their equipment is happy and everything goes well. Many times, they don't say a word. They're just in the corner observing. And I use a lot of medical devices during my operations. Mm-hmm. And these medical devices are made by companies, and they're expensive pieces of equipment. And there's a lot at stake there. So if there's any question that surgeons have about a medical device, there's a rep there to answer it. But there are reps in every operating room in this country.
And what happened in this case?
Well, this was an interesting case because I had been using an instrument I'd been using for 10 years that worked perfectly well. And there was a new improved instrument on the market. When something is new improved, I always, you know, kind of snicker a little bit because it usually costs more and many times it's not improved. But this particular case, it replaced the older devices on the shelves, and I really wasn't aware of this. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. So he handed me this new device. It was similar to the old one, but not quite exactly the same. And at the time, the patient was asleep. I had made some of my incisions, and I was stuck. Either I continue on or I don't. And I used it. And it didn't work very well. So I was not happy. So I threw him out of the room and did what I had to do to complete the operation. Months later, I found out this device, they just retracted it because it had a lot of complaints from surgeons. And it was never seen again. I'm still using the same old device that works just as well.
Huh. Talking with Dr. Paul Ruggieri, he is author of The Cost of Cutting, A Surgeon Reveals the Truth Behind a Multi-Billion Dollar Industry, on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Dr. Ruggieri, how many surgeons feel like you do?
Well, you know, I think a lot of them do. In their minds, they won't speak up. And I think a lot of us feel the same way. Some will speak up. A lot of us won't because we're busy. We really don't want to concentrate on controversial topics. But I think we're all on the same page if you start inquiring about it.
Did you have some event that struck you and said, you know, I've got to write these books. You've written a series of books. I've got to write these now because I don't want anyone else to go through this.
Yeah, that's a good question. All right. You know, when my father died 12 years ago, he was probably the most honest man I've ever known. And at that point, I got to a point in my career where I didn't care about what other people thought about what I thought. I mean, I was a good surgeon. I had good outcomes. And I said, I need to say some things to the public about what's going on in my profession, what's going on with the business of surgery, because it affects patient care. And I've seen it. We've all seen it if you're in this business long enough. And I just wanted to write some books about it.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard from other surgeons?
I have not. The first book that I wrote, Confessions of a Surgeon, had some controversial topics in it, and I did hear from some. Not many, though. Yeah. I mean, I think they respected what I had to say. And with this book, I think their opinions, they keep to themselves.
Do you think you're getting the silent treatment then?
It's possible. You know, again, I don't focus on that, to be honest with you. It may be. At the end of the day, I can sleep pretty well at night.
And how do you stay on that course? What keeps you focused on your course of action and trying to be as open and transparent as possible?
My wife. She keeps me focused.
Does
she really does. But, my wife, my Rhodesian Ridgeback. I try to live my life a certain way. I'm very honest with my patients. I tell them up front what could happen if something does happen. I'm not perfect. I've had complications. Mm-hmm. I tell them how it happened. Yeah. And that's how I've tried to live my life. It's a lot easier that way, really.
One bit of advice can you give to other surgeons who are right on the edge like you are and would like to, you know, be as transparent as possible?
Well, you know, everybody's an individual and they have to live within themselves. I think most of us are think the same way, but there are a lot of pressures right now out there, financial pressures to make a living, to keep your job. And, you know, surgeons, just taking care of patients alone is a lot of pressure. You know, I can just tell them to be honest with their patients and be honest with themselves, and everybody has to live their own life. You know, I don't expect other surgeons to speak out the way I'm speaking out.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they're working among their other cohorts, their other peers as surgeons in an office. It's kind of complicated.
It can be. The bottom line is the patient care. I mean, what is best for the patient? That's really all that counts.
Mm-hmm. All right. I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today. And what was the name of your first book? Because that was interesting.
Confessions of a Surgeon. The Good, the Bad, and the Complicated Life Behind the Operating Room Doors.
Mm-hmm. And this one is The Cost of Cutting. A Surgeon Reveals the Truth Behind a Multi-Billion-Dollar Industry. And we have an excerpt of the book at sciencefriday.com/The Cost of Cutting. It's a really great excerpt. It will open your eyes to reading the rest of the book and his other book. Thank you, Dr. Paul Ruggieri, for taking time to be with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.